What a time, what a warm and wondrous time. So sweet a shining moment in the sun. Oh, what a time, was there ever such a time? Then suddenly it's done, the moment passes. Where does the time go? Must we let it end? Where does the time?
Time is almost up. Thanks for listening to Big Band Broadway and Beyond. God bless, and if anybody asks, tell them Joe sent you.
Must we let it end?
This is the WHFR Journal on WHFR Dearborn from Henry Ford Community College, where local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. Hi, this is WHFR Journal. Good morning, good afternoon, however you're listening to the show. If it's live, it's Friday afternoon, October
12th.
The 12th, 2012. Okay, 10-12-12. Almost perfect there. In any event, my name is Jay Kornick. I'm station advisor here at WHFR, and joining me as my co-host again today is our WHFR news director, Dennis Reimars. Hello, Dennis.
Hello. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening.
Okay. I think covering you're on this micro. Yes, there we go.
Covering our bases.
We can hear you. Obviously, in terms of local news and alternative views, a lot of people, even locally, you're probably talking about the Biden-Ryan debate. It was scrappy Biden's part. My opinion was, no, he wasn't a bully. He was just scrappy. It's like a good informal debate, like a British debate should be. I don't know, Dennis, if you've ever seen, sometimes on C-SPAN, once a week, they actually show you where the Prime Minister of England gets up in front of Parliament, and they all attack him verbally. I mean, they yell, they scream, they shout, and he yells and screams and shouts back. But they're still extremely intelligent,
Other than the intelligent part, that sounds like Christmas at
but
my house.
What a scrappy way to do that! And of course, that's one kind of debate that you know, certainly wasn't last night. It, no. It wasn't that kind of a shout fest back and forth and with a little bit of deference to the one person that had the floor, in this case, the Prime Minister of England. What's his name? Anyway, Gordon? No. Anyway, he has to defend himself once a week. It's required to get up there for 2 hours and be attacked. And of course, they boo, they heckle
sure.
from both sides. Everybody's there. And it's just expected that they do that, that they put up with that. And
it sounds entertaining.
It is kind of. It's boggles our mind. Now, I know about college debates, and they're very formal, and they're judged based on the facts. What facts do you present, and how fast can you talk and give a number of facts?
True.
You know, they actually count them. Well, there's one more fact. There's another fact. There's another fact within, like, your 2 minutes or 1 minute. So it's based on, it's judged, actually, finally, on the number of facts each team was able to present, sometimes countering the other person's facts. And they would judge it that way, too. So, well, that fact countered what the other person said, so they don't get a point. Because this fact trumps, if you will, the other fact, and you don't allow any sort of crazy antics, and there's somewhere in between for these the way they do these political debates, and nothing wrong with being spunky as long as you don't get dirty and insulting, personally insulting. You don't want to do that.
But these political debates don't let the facts get in the way of a really good story, do they? I mean, my favorite part of every debate is when they say, okay, this is where they were wrong.
Yeah. Well, these days you have to have the fact checkers, and it's not always the media that does it.
Right.
And so you have to bring in other people. Sometimes they're called spin doctors, but those people are trying to slant things according to whoever pays
right.
them. And so the truth squads of one sort or another have to come in, and that's really what's important to find out. If you care about truth, not just posturing, I sent a comment from some expert said, reason Obama lost was he didn't learn the basic principle of TV performance, which is, you have to love the camera. You make believe that that's not more than your friend. You know, mm-hmm. you smile at it. Biden smiled a lot last night.
Yes, he did.
You know? And you look at it a lot, and you take it as a good friend there who's paying attention, close attention to you, and you're not afraid of it. You can't be afraid of it. Well, of course, our great general manager and teacher of our media performance on campus, she said, yeah, I totally agree, and of course this is what we teach in class, but of
sure.
course content matters, and it's too bad that people judge, and I'm not sure who she might vote for this fall, but typically she's not generally in favor of Democrats, but she actually said, as an objective, rational person, you know, it's too bad that most people pay attention only to the media performance, the style part of it,
sure.
and not the content. And I'm thinking, yeah, college debates, that's all that the judges, who are well-versed on the topic, too. You know, in college debates, the teams that debate for a whole year, and this is formal college competition debates, and you may be aware of some of this, there's one topic chosen for them throughout the year. And they know going in if they're going to be pro or con.
Sure.
And they practice for weeks to do research and how fast they can both remember and speak the facts that support their case for one side of it or the other. So they only practice one topic, and the judges, therefore, they know that topic too going in and what all the facts are on both sides.
Sure.
It's a matter of presentation and quickness, and in some cases, quick wit. Now, the British form of collegiate debates, there's a lot more wit, and I mean intelligent barbs, not personal attacks or whatever. And then, of course, then there's the Prime Minister debacle that I don't think is productive, but entertaining to watch, I think. And certainly you can't be Prime Minister of England if you can't hold your own verbally against basically a hostile audience for 2 hours.
I have to see this. That sounds so fascinating.
Yeah, it's usually late night on C-SPAN.
Okay.
If they're still covering it. I hope they're still bringing it over.
I'm sure I can find it on YouTube,
yeah.
too.
So there's many different kinds of debates, and style doesn't really matter that much. I have to say the worst style I've ever seen was the last debate for mayor of Detroit in which Kwame Kilpatrick participated. Talk about a dirty debater. And I'm not referring to anything about his you know, corruption cases that are currently ongoing. I'm just saying
his performance. Sure.
Yeah, he was insulting. He was using dirty slang about his opponents. He was swaggering.
He's sarcastic as heck, too, isn't he?
Oh, very.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I thought this. Who would ever vote for someone?
It tends to undermine the effort. You know?
To me, but of course he won that election.
Oh, I see.
You know, I mean, apparently he knew his audience, whatever that is.
Sure.
That as long as you swagger and act bold and insult your opponent consistently, oh, he's a strong man. I'm going to vote for him. Good for him and being so bold and dirty. And,
but unfortunately, that is a majority of the public perception is based upon not necessarily the content, but how it's delivered.
Plus, his suits must have been like $2,000 suits.
Yeah, exactly.
And they were amazingly
tailored.
Of course, they had to be. He obviously could not fit into something off the rack.
Very big man.
Yeah. If it wasn't shaped perfectly, he would look like the balloon he really was, which is embarrassing for anyone to... run for office, I think, and be that bad a role model. Although Paul Ryan had some pictures taken last year for an article in Time that they showed yesterday on television where he was like pumping up.
Mm-hmm.
He's a skinny little guy.
Yeah.
But he always concerned about health because both of his dad and grandfather, at least, a couple of his male relatives died early of heart attacks. So
wow.
He's trying to keep fit. He goes to the gym and that. And so he's got some good arm muscles, but what a scrawny kid. And of course everybody's making fun of it, Democrats, but that's fine. At least he's staying healthy and he's trim and but it's just the dirty campaigning style in debate by Kilpatrick, I think, was the worst performance I've ever seen. But somehow style must have triumphed with his audience because he won handily over the other candidates at that time.
Weren't you the one who, we've talked about this before, that the negative campaigns are far more effective than positive ones? And right or wrong, it's just how it is.
Well, they shouldn't be, but
right.
People like that sort of fighting thing. I mean, there's so many metaphors in our society, you know, where, you know, your football, your high school football team, maybe even your parochial school Catholic team, is fighting to kill the other team.
Going
to
war and battle.
Yeah, we're going to war. All those war metaphors, and it's not good. You know, it's not appropriate in any context, and maybe even for the national or international context. It's just the wrong kind of thing to teach our children and to set examples for others. But nonetheless, let's put that aside. What we have for you right now here on the Journal is something you won't find elsewhere except another non-commercial station in town. And thanks to National Public Radio putting this up on the web for all to hear and see, although it was kind of buried. So this is from October 6th. That was 6 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
And this is actually amazing. This is a debate. It's only 11 minutes long overall. I'm going to let the NPR person introduce it. From National Public Radio, debate with the two other major political candidates on the ballot in Michigan. Well, not Gary Johnson, but Libertarian Party is there anyway, and I'll talk about Johnson afterwards. But this is Dr. Jill Stein, who is a presidential candidate for the Green Party on the ballot in Michigan, November 6th. You can vote for her if you want to for president, or you could actually write in a vote for Gary Johnson. I'll explain why his name isn't there, but both he and Jill Stein are on enough ballots across the United States, enough state election ballots that, if people vote for them, they could be the next president. But who knows about them? Well, that's part of the problem. And they even have a little quote from Ralph Nader in the story. So listen up here, 11 minutes NPR story, which includes a debate between Stein and Johnson.
From NPR News, it's Weekends and All Things Considered. I'm Guy Raz. Here's what it's like to be a third-party candidate running for president.
You're excluded from the debates. You spend an exhausting amount of time until Labor Day just trying to get over the ballot access barriers. Your petitioners are harassed in the streets. You're subjected to baseless lawsuits by one party or another.
That's Ralph Nader. He's run for president 3 times, 4 if you count the time he ran unofficially. In 2000, he managed to win almost 3% of the national vote. And that year, he tried to get in on a debate between George W. Bush and Al Gore.
Well, I went to Northeastern University in Boston, where one of the debates was going on, and I had a ticket to go to an adjoining building right next to the building that had the debate going on, and I was almost arrested.
And to this day, try getting a third-party candidate into a debate, and, well, it's practically impossible. The Commission on Presidential Debate says to be included, you have to poll 15% with voters, which is why George Farah, the founder of Open Debate, it's a group that wants the system reformed, it's why he thinks the commission is the main problem.
And this commission exists for the principal purpose of protecting and strengthening the two parties. And every 4 years, they allow the candidates, the major party candidates, to negotiate agreements that dictate many of the terms of the debates, including the exclusion of popular third-party voices.
So given that the two major party candidates had 90 minutes and at least 50 million viewers on Wednesday night, we decided to invite two of the third-party candidates to an NPR debate. That's our cover story, the NPR third-party candidate debate, so cue the music. Tonight, Weekends and All Things Considered brings you the third-party debate. Two candidates vying for the White House will battle it out to win a piece of the electorate. Gary Johnson is the Libertarian Party's nominee. Jill Stein is the Green Party's. And we even have some canned applause. And now, let the debate begin. Gary Johnson is in Cincinnati, Ohio. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
And welcome also to Jill Stein in Houston, Texas.
Great to be with you, Guy.
Okay, Gary Johnson, Jill Stein, you both know the rules. We're going to focus on domestic issues, the economy, healthcare, and the role of government. And I'm going to be keeping you to the time allotted for each answer. So, Gary Johnson, you have 30 seconds to make an opening statement. Go.
Country's in deep doo-doo. Let's stop the growing police state. Let's stop our military interventions. Let's balance the federal budget. Let's eliminate income tax, corporate tax. Let's abolish the IRS, replace all that with one federal consumption tax. That will create tens of millions of jobs in a zero corporate tax rate environment.
Jill Stein.
How much time did I have to spare? Just to give me a sense.
You actually have 5-6 seconds left.
Oh, shoot. Okay, I won't make that mistake. Yeah. Thank you.
Jill Stein, you have 30 seconds to make your case.
Well, we are in crisis. We're losing our jobs, decent wages, our homes, affordable health care and higher education. Civil liberties are under attack, and the climate's in meltdown. The wealthy few are doing better than ever, and the political establishment's making it worse, imposing austerity on everyday people while they squander trillions on wars, Wall Street bailouts, and tax breaks for the wealthy. A vote for me is a vote for the solutions that we need, for jobs, not corporate tax breaks, for health care as a human right, public higher education that's free, ending student debt, and downsizing the military to pay for it.
All right, great. Let's start with the economy. Jill Stein, you're going to go first, and you will have 45 seconds. What is your plan to jumpstart the U.S. economy? And please be as specific as possible.
Great. Well, the economy is working great if you're a hedge fund manager or a big CEO or a bank, but it's not working for everyday people. So we need to first and foremost create jobs. We're calling for a Green New Deal that will create 25 million jobs, that will jumpstart a green economy and put an end to unemployment, and that will call a halt to climate change and make wars for oil obsolete because we'll have a green economy.
Gary Johnson, your plan?
I think we need to balance the federal budget immediately, or we're going to find ourselves in the midst of a monetary collapse. So I am promising to submit a balanced budget to Congress in the year 2013, which is a $1.4 trillion reduction in federal spending. And that would include the entitlements, Medicaid, Medicare, military spending. I would eliminate income tax, corporate tax. I would abolish the IRS. I would replace all of that with one federal consumption tax, the fair tax. I think that's the answer when it comes to American jobs, because in a zero corporate tax rate environment, if the private sector doesn't create tens of millions of jobs, I don't know what it takes to create tens of millions of jobs. It's also the answer when it comes to our exports. With China, for example, we're going to bleed out all existing federal tax. That's what will make us competitive.
We've reached 30 seconds. Let's move on to the topic of health care. Jill Stein, you are a medical doctor. What would a Stein administration's health care plan look like?
We need to simply bring the eligibility age for Medicare down to zero, in fact, pre-zero, from the moment of conception, so that people would be covered throughout life and from the very beginning of pregnancy. Because in doing that, we can cover everyone comprehensively, including your teeth and your ears and your eyes and your pharmaceuticals and your mental health and your reproductive health and all those things that get chopped out. We can cover it all and still save trillions of dollars over the coming decade, because a Medicare for All plan actually reduces the incredible, massive, wasteful private health insurance bureaucracy, puts all our health care dollars into health care,
okay,
and it reduces that inflation that's driving up the cost.
All right. Gary Johnson, would a President Johnson repeal Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act? And if so, what is your plan to insure uninsured Americans?
Well, first of all, I would not have insurance to cover myself for ongoing medical need if we had a genuine free market approach to health care. And by the way, health care in this country is about as far removed from free market as it possibly could be. But I would have insurance to cover myself for catastrophic injury and illness, and I would pay as you go in a system that was absolutely competitive. What about government embarking on the notion of doubling the number of doctors as opposed to restricting all the choices that we have? This is what's leading to high costs and the fact that we don't have a whole bunch of choices when a whole bunch of choices could exist.
So you would repeal Obamacare?
That, and I would also repeal the Republicans' Medicaid Part D prescription health care benefits. Look, the alternative to not reining in these costs is we're going to suffer a monetary collapse. And a monetary collapse is when the money that we have doesn't buy a thing because of the accompanying inflation that is going to go along with borrowing and printing money to the to the tune of 43 cents out of every dollar we're spending.
Okay. Jill Stein, your rebuttal?
Well, we have plenty of examples, fortunately, of where Medicare for All, which is essentially the system, a single-payer insurance system that's used in practically every developed country around the world, they are providing health care at half the cost per person, yet they are getting far better health outcomes. People are living longer, they're less sick, and lower infant mortality. So instead of trying to invent a system that hasn't been found to work yet through a free-for-all health care system, there is no such thing as a free market in health care, mm-hmm. and the U.S. sort of comes as close as any to it, and it's complete chaos here. Let's use the example of what's working. Medicare is working, and in fact, to really save money, we want to have not just a sick care system, is what we have right now, but a real health care system by implementing prevention and an infrastructure for health at the level of our communities.
All right, and that's time for you. Finally, the role of government for the both of you. Let me begin with Gary Johnson. What role do you believe the government has in ensuring the well-being of Americans?
The government has a role to protect us against individuals, groups, corporations that would do us harm. Government has a role to protect us against foreign countries that would attack this country. But I use the notion of under attack. We continually militarily intervene, and as a result of that, we have hundreds of millions of enemies to this country that, but for these military interventions, would otherwise not exist.
Jill Stein, should government be making investments in infrastructure in this country?
Yes, we should. We need to use what has worked before, and we've been in an economic crisis before in the Great Depression, and one of the ways we came out was through the New Deal, which went a long way to get the economy back on its feet. I think we're in trouble now, and the role of government, I think, is to help us, to help we the people. We need a government of, by, and for the people, not of, by, and for the corporations. There's way too much corporations running the show in government, but the solution to a bad, corrupt government is not no government. It's good government.
Time now for closing remarks. Both of you have 30 seconds each. Gary Johnson, for those uncommitted to either President Obama or Mitt Romney, why should they vote for you?
Whether you vote for Mitt Romney or Barack Obama, I'm going to offer up a couple of predictions. One is we're going to continue to have a heightened police state in this country. The other is that we're going to find ourselves in a continued state of military intervention. We are at continuous war with everyone. And then lastly, we're going to find ourselves, regardless of which one of these two guys gets elected, we're going to find ourselves continuing to borrow and spend money in ways that are absolutely unsustainable. And if we don't get control of this, we are going to collapse as a country. We are not immune from the mathematics of continuing to borrow and print money to the tune of 43 cents out of every dollar we spend.
Okay. Jill Stein, why should Americans make you President Stein?
Well, I agree with Gary that we are really headed in the wrong direction. In fact, we're accelerating in the wrong direction under both parties. And in fact, Barack Obama has basically embraced most of the key policies of George Bush on the bailouts for Wall Street, the layoffs for Main Street, the expanding free trade agreements that offshore our jobs and undermine wages at home, the expanding wars, attack on our civil liberties, drill baby drill on the climate, you name it. We're going in the wrong direction. We need a president. We need a political party that is of, by, and for the people. if you go into the voting booth and you cast a vote for either Wall Street-sponsored candidate, you are giving them a mandate for four more years of the same.
And that is all the time we have. Thank you to our candidates, Gary Johnson, the Libertarian Party's nominee for president, and thanks also to Jill Stein, the Green Party's candidate for president. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, guys.
Thank you
good
so
job.
Much.
And to those of you at home, stay with us. You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.
Well, actually, you're listening to WHFR. At Henry Ford Community College, WHFR.FM, the station making waves, because who else would even rerun that publicly available podcast? And, of course, it's kind of interesting to me that All Things Considered Weekend is probably one of their less listened to time periods.
Sure.
Normally, All Things Considered is Monday through Friday, 4 to 6, I believe, on WDET in Detroit anyway. And it's a fine, objective news summary. But they didn't run this. They might have had it available, but they save it for weekends because it's a little special feature and there's nothing else happening. And but only non-commercial stations would be so brave as to give you the information you really need in a relatively unbiased sort of way. I mean, these people are on the ballot in enough states that you could vote for them, and if enough people did, they could be president of the United States. And of course, you don't find out about that. You say, well, if they were any good, they'd have TV commercials. They can't afford it because they can't raise money easily because you, loyal listeners and others, the American public, never heard of them before in many cases.
You know, can we talk just for a couple seconds about the Green Party National Convention that was here in Detroit the same year? It was they also had a social reform type event downtown. Remember, we went down to Wayne State.
Yes, right.
And it was really interesting because whereas the other, not even conventions, but other events put out by the Republicans and the Democrats, and even the Libertarians to a degree, were kind of, I don't know, I call it like little, they're flashy and glossy and colorful and everything and very professional. And when we went there to the Green Party, we had these name tags that, first of all, we were WFHR instead of HFR, and it was on a piece of index paper with holes punched out in string. I'm not slamming them, but
somebody used a magic marker to write them up at the
Sharpie.
Last second.
Yeah, and those were our media credentials, and it really shows you how limited in funds, but they got us in there and they treated us very well.
They're not wasting any money, that's for sure.
No, they shouldn't have used paper, though, as far as I'm concerned. I'm just kidding.
And if you are a third party, whether a Libertarian has the largest number of official members and is on more ballots in the United States than the Green Party, but the Green Party and the Libertarian Party, the only two parties that actually, because they're on so many state ballots, have a chance, if people vote for them, of actually winning in the Electoral College the race for president of the United States. As they say, it's a long shot, but that's not even appropriate term. I have a statement here somewhere. Yes.
Do you have it?
Yep. From Jill Stein, who was just speaking, the Green Party candidate for president, about the whole wasted vote issue. Because people always want to know about this. And there's a big ballot coming up in, you know, November 6th, folks. There's a lot of issues there. And I think personally you should not be afraid to vote for the candidate and or the party that you believe is the best answer, the best solution to whatever problems that are biggest to you. And it should not matter about party. And my feeling is, before I read this, is certainly to remind you that the Constitution of the United States of America has no mention in it and no requirement for political parties.
Right.
Okay? So when some political science teacher, oh, we got to be a two-party system in America, it's all going to fall apart, that is not true. Okay, I think Joe Biden used the term malarkey, because you don't want to call your opponent a liar.
Never.
You know, that wouldn't be nice, or any other synonym like that. But malarkey is kind of a fun word, but as one commentator said after, he said, what does malarkey mean? It does mean lies, doesn't it?
It means it's probably not true. Yes.
Yeah, malarkey is something that's not probably true. Anyway, nothing about political parties required by or implied by or even mentioned in the U.S. Constitution. So I know in a big country like we have today, not 13 little colonies, you probably need a national organization of some sort on an ongoing basis in order to have a chance to win elections effectively. You need that organization, and so why not call it a political party? But this wasted vote issue, here goes Jill Stein's statement, and it doesn't just apply to Greens, it applies to any third party you might consider. Holding parties accountable for 30 years as this country's largest transfer of wealth to the rich means coming to terms with the fact that neither, the big two parties, are in a position to solve the challenges we face. While some partisan Democrats are once again claiming that a vote for the Greens is a vote for the Republicans, that argument falls flat with millions of disenfranchised voters who believe that we can do better. And, of course, Republican parties and across the country, including in Michigan, are fighting Gary Johnson and the Libertarian Party candidacy, which is why he's not on the ballot in Michigan, like crazy, because they don't want you to vote for Gary Johnson. It might take away votes from George Romney. And even though...
Mitt Romney.
Mitt Romney.
Mm-hmm. George is his brother. And he's
yeah,
not
I think
running.
I'd vote for George again. He was elected governor here at least 3 times, I believe. A lot of people liked him. He was a moderate Republican, mm-hmm. however, unlike what Mitt says he is right now, anyway. But anyway, she goes on to say, Jill Stein, these are Americans who believe we must stop our descent into economic disparity, the erosion of our civil liberties, and the corruption of our political system by corporate power and massive wealth. She said, the fact is political parties change over time, so why shouldn't our votes change as well? I remember my grandparents significantly when I was young. I always was asking, you know, my parents, how are you going to vote? And I know what I think. I don't know much. And my grandparents said, well, last time we voted, let's say, Republican. Mm-hmm. And they said, so this time, this 4 years later, we're going to vote Democrat. Okay. Because we don't want any particular party to get to be in office too long. Sort of like their version of term limits.
Okay.
You know, that keep them honest. If they're in the, you know, the center of power too long, they have too much power, they're going to get a little bit corrupted or jaded or whatever. And so they didn't really have a party affiliate. They just knew that whoever was in office, they were going to vote them out. The same might be said, just slightly extended. The Democrats and Republicans have gotten us into this mess collectively. Okay, you have to blame both sides for everything today, because either one president or the other, whether you look back to Clinton, Democrat, or you look to George W. Bush, Obama was left with a mess in office, and Republicans have effectively stopped any direct action or singular big plan that he might have had, since they controlled effectively the House and the Senate for the last time, certainly the last 2 years. So she said, why should we change our votes as well? I'm sure my grandparents would vote for a third party, you know, understanding our situation today.
Just to mix
today,
it up.
Just to mix it up.
Sure.
Not actually believing anything that they stand for, which is unfortunate. But that's one way to look at it. But that's not, you know, I don't think you should have that opinion. You should vote for what you know to be good and true, no matter what party or what candidate it is that's talking about it. The choice is made, finally, Jill Stein says. Do we wish to be truly represented? Do we need to set a new course as a country? Do we need a real opposition party immediately capable of new ideas and energy that isn't subject to the approval of the most rich and powerful? This is the usual argument, evil versus eviler. Choosing the lesser of two evils keeps things exactly as they are. Fear tactics have worked well in the past to keep party stragglers and independent voters in check. But today's America is not the America of 2000. We've seen firsthand that the lesser of two evils isn't lesser at all. Arguably, it is worse because we're encouraged to hope against history, yet the outcome is the same.
Hmm.
And so, you know, I'm just saying, do not immediately reject the Green Party or Libertarian Party until you find out what they stand for.
Sure.
and you know something about their candidates.
And there are more. And it takes support of what the Constitution
Party. Her final conclusion is what we recommend to you. First of all, read, think, and then vote what you believe. If we all found the courage to do so, says Jill Stein, we begin to rebuild the country we deserve instead of settling for what gets left behind. And you can't just believe those TV commercials one way or the other. You can't just believe what you heard in the debates one way or the other. Because remember, the debates are intentionally closed, because the debate committee is controlled by Democrats and Republicans. It is. It's not controlled by the League of Women Voters. The debates are controlled, and they don't let in those third parties on purpose. Okay? They don't have 15% of the polls, so we can't. They're on the ballot. They are an equal choice in a majority of states. You need to let them in. Now, I wanted to mention about, and I didn't realize this, I've already filled out and sent in my absentee ballot.
All right.
And we want to mention that just a statement came from the Dearborn Clerk's office today. You'll probably see it in the papers next week. This is on patch.com. Dearborn Clerk, as well as Dearborn Heights Clerk, they urge voters to cast absentee ballots this election. So you get that ballot from the city clerk, you fill it in, you send it back or give it back, or just go there and get one and hand it, fill it in there.
Right at the office,
it might take you a half an hour or more to do it, to read it all, even if you had a list going in, and hand it back to them directly, because the lines are going to be longer. Okay?
They are adding employees. I mean, I don't want to scare people away, but they
will
be.
It's a two-page ballot, and it's
front and back.
It's more than a two-page ballot. It's two pages that you have to, you know, fill in the boxes for.
Mm-hmm.
The ballot itself that you read that explains what the ballots, what the ballot proposals and who all the candidates are, is actually about 10, 12 pages,
right.
Small little pages, but you turn them and then you blacken. So it's two ballot pages front and back,
mm-hmm,
that you have to fill in with your choices. But all the explanations and the full names of, you know, that's actually about 10 pages long. So highly recommend you, family, friends, registered to vote, go to your city clerk's office, wherever you're listening, Detroit, whatever, and get those absentee ballots. You can call them. They will send them to you. And then if you have to, you can send them back.
I just want to mention that this past Tuesday, we did our latest installment of Dearborn Heights News and Views, and we had a lengthy, actually like a 25, 26-minute interview with the county clerk, or the city clerk in Dearborn Heights, Walter Pershevitz.
Yes.
And he explained in detail all the different things. Good. And some of the things, if you don't do, like we had talked about, I think it was last week, if you have an absentee ballot and you don't choose not to, if you want to actually go and physically vote, just bring it with you and swap it out. You can do that.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. Just a little plug here. Dennis's monthly show that we just, it's the second episode now that we're doing monthly. We did Dearborn Heights News and Views before on Tuesdays, once a month, whenever there was a fifth Tuesday, and
right,
that's not that often, but Dearborn Heights deserves better than that.
Absolutely.
Anyway, so now we're doing it monthly on the second Tuesday. And so this week's date was
the ninth.
And so if you go to our website, if you didn't hear the show, Dennis hosting it, and details about Dearborn Heights and the clerk's comments there, you can go to whfr.fm, our website, click on talk shows, and then click on Tuesday Forum and choose October 9th, 2012. And you can listen to it right then as a stream, or you can download it and listen at your convenience anytime. So that's extremely relevant once a month, especially if you're a resident of Dearborn Heights, I think. You get sort of that extra perspective you may not find anywhere else.
There's a lot going on in this. And one of the other things the clerk said, while we're talking about this, he said, please be careful. If you choose to vote strictly by party and you do that on the front and you just black in one of the parties, that doesn't mean you voted for the judicial candidates. You still have other candidates that are nonpartisan,
yeah,
which will be council people too.
And I do want to talk about that. First of all, there's not that many stories from our regular newspapers here on the new WHFR Journal. We do alternative news and views about Dearborn and the surrounding areas. And, of course, we use not only dearborn.patch.com stories but on a timely basis, but also the newspapers, Dearborn Press and Guide, Sunday and Wednesday editions, and also Dearborn Times Herald. And I thought the most important thing to mention, since, time flies, only about 22 minutes left in this hour for our show, is the Dearborn Press and Guide. I have been criticizing them on this show out loud over the airwaves for the last month or so, that they've been covering like crime news, and they don't cover enough of the political news.
Right.
And there's an awful lot going to be on these ballots, and they should get their act together and be the public service that we expect of a good newspaper. So Tim Powers has a statement on Wednesday, December 10th, front page. Coverage of upcoming election can help you make an informed decision in November. And he lists the stories they're doing this week as well as in the future. And through, I guess, the Sunday before election. And for this issue, If you want more background, and it's a great story from an Alan Berdziak at the Press and Guide, about Proposal 1, legal strife and controversy marked the 2001 Emergency Manager Law, 2011 law.
Act 4.
And Proposition 2, they have a story on the same page about that. We'll decide the future of collective bargaining.
Sure.
So it's collective bargaining pro or con issue. Great in-depth explanations. Now, of course, we did our proposal show about 3 weeks ago, and that's available to listen to on the Journal. I think I even put a title there so you can find it under whfr.fm, talk shows, WHFR Journal button, and then look for a couple of weeks ago. Don't remember the date right now, but it doesn't matter. It's actually a title there right in the list. It's our proposal show. So we did pro and con, sort of like this, several weeks ago, and you might want to listen to that to give you points of view. But good for the Press and Guide. It's all in writing there. They don't take one side or the other, but they go more in-depth than even the explanations by the League of Women Voters on their so-called sample ballot and on their vote411.org website, which is a great resource, too. In addition, Glenn Gilbert, and I think it's an editorial that was in Times Herald last week. Dennis has a copy of it, a physical copy. It's about 40 pages long, and you can pick it up where, Dennis? Where did you get yours?
I stole this from somebody.
Okay, but at the city clerk's office.
Yeah, that's where they had it, actually.
Yeah, at your city hall, and you can go and get them from there. They should be in quantity.
And then I got this from Bob Constant's office, state rep going out.
All the state reps have been sending out ballot proposals.
Really
all
cool.
The Democrats, George Duraney sent one, Senator Morris Hood. All the Democrats are quite fairly sending out these proposals and indicating reasons pro and reasons con for you to look at. So they don't take sides. But the Democrats really want you to be informed. Good for them.
Well, what Constant did was if you vote, people that are voting yes say this. People that are voting no say. So that's exactly the pros and cons.
Hood and Duraney did the same thing. But absolutely. If you can get a printed copy, but that's also at vote411.com. You can download that to your computer. Yep. And it'll be for the local area because you put in your own residential address, and then it tailors what you see to what you're going to be voting on. But you can get the physical copy at the league. So Glenn Gilbert in the Press and Guide on Wednesday talks about Proposal 3. He is writing an editorial opinion there. He is, though, it seems like he's in favor of it. He does think that voting in favor of it entails a bit of faith. I don't think it's faith. It just trust in the future, like more than 30 states in the U.S. are already doing, that we've got to be greener, we've got to be cleaner, we've got to be more energy efficient, and government has got to set the standard or it's not going to happen. It hasn't happened yet, and we know that the mileage requirements for automobiles set by the federal government, it happened already once. And it's at 27 miles per gallon fleet mileage of new cars.
Sure.
And 54 is not impossible in another, was it 8 years? 2020, I believe, or is it 2024, somewhere? Yeah, but it's doable, folks. But unless you have a consistent government federal standard, the manufacturers have all the ingenuity and creativity they want to use to get there. You know, nobody's saying how they're going to do it, but it's doable. You know, Union of Concerned Scientists, they're scientists, for gosh sakes. They say it's doable.
Right.
You can do it. It's not a sacrifice, a compromise. Sure, you're going to spend R&D money anyway, but why just spend it on changing the style of the car? Why not change it in a functional way to give you better gas mileage or not even need gas? My car doesn't use gas.
Right.
It's diesel.
It's diesel.
Okay, which requires...
Clean diesel.
It's clean diesel. It requires less refining, less expense to go from oil to diesel fuel than it does to go from oil to gasoline. And yes, if you have all the clean technology available, not clean like clean coal, which is not really clean yet. Nobody's quite figured out how to make coal really clean and good. But yeah, cleaner is possible with coal. But we're talking about diesel fuel burning that is actually cleaner than burning gasoline right now. So, yeah, we're doing something for the environment. I give credit, as I did a couple of weeks ago, Ford Fusion and now Ford C-Max plug-in hybrids.
Right.
The plug-in, not just their hybrids, which get an average of about 50 miles to a gallon, the best in the U.S., but their new C-Max and Fusion plug-in hybrids get an estimated 100 miles to gallon. because they got batteries and they're going to use them. And every night, yes, you need to plug them in somewhere. Okay. When you're not using your car and when the electricity is not being used elsewhere at night, and that's the perfect time to plug them in for the sake of the grid, as they call it. And it costs you, and it's estimated overall average for average driving, some on the highway, outside, some in the city close by, which will be all electric powered. And then on the bigger highways, you'll need to go to the gas engine, or extended trips, you'll need to burn, the gas and the engine all the time. But so sort of a mixture of city and highway driving, 100 miles per gallon average. Those should be so popular. That's such a magic number. And they're clean, too. I mean, these are clean, efficient engines.
But 35 to 40,000 took the cost on that. Don't you think there's still a little cost prohibitive at this point?
Well, you look at how many miles you drive, Dennis, every day. I live 3 miles away. I don't need that kind of vehicle because I fill up my diesel car, which is averaging in the city about 22 miles to a gallon, on the highway 34 miles to a gallon. And I have a big honking diesel, big heavy duty. Well, I don't need it, but I don't go anywhere, so I'm not really polluting anything. I fill up maybe once a month or once every 2 months, so it's almost like I had a plug-in hybrid.
That's what I was going to say.
I don't need that, But for whatever is right for you, if you drive a lot, if you have to commute from. Yeah, and it's too bad if you have to commute an hour a day each way, like from Ann Arbor or something in here, then, oh my gosh, this will save you a fortune. And let's not forget, though, all these cars are available, and even the Nissan Leaf, which is all right. Electric, going to have better batteries this fall, and they're dropping the cost. The lease on that per month is less than $200 a month now, and the car still costs $35,000.
That's true.
So look at these lease deals, folks.
Yeah.
If you're within the mileage on the lease, like $12,000, $15,000 a year,
yep.
Oh, my gosh, the lease deal is the best one. You don't even have to worry about, well, what will I do when the batteries don't charge anymore? So look at those lease deals, especially on plug-in hybrids. I know, to be fair, Toyota Prius has a plug-in plug-in hybrid, as well as the Chevy Volt. They're
right.
All both plug-in hybrids. That's what you should consider for your next car. Yes, the price of admission, if you want to buy it, is big, but the lease price is not that bad. And what you're going to save per month is more than going to make up for everything else that's going on.
To the proposal, the 25 and 25, I had an mm-hmm. opportunity to speak with, I told you off the air, Eric Lufer yesterday from Citizens Research Council of Michigan. He made a really good point about that. And I asked him, I said, do you think that's realistic? And he said, for most states, yes. He mm-hmm. said, but Michigan's in that really weird dynamic where we don't necessarily have enough wind in most of the area. We don't have any water falling, which is important for the
not hydroelectric.
Right.
No, yeah.
And he said that biomass may be our only way realistically to be able to meet that kind of goal, because he looked at the different solar. We're not Arizona or Texas.
Well,
so
I just slightly disagree. The solar experts I talked to, the latest technologies can make use and we're talking about cost effective use of the sun that we have.
Sure.
It used to be 10 years ago the technology was such that forget about solar in Michigan. We're just too cloudy, too rainy,
right.
Too many different seasons. We don't have enough consistent big-time bright sun, although we do today, October 12th, mark it in your calendar, we had big-time sun.
Yeah.
But in fact, the new technology, absolutely, it's cost-effective. They actually think a combination of wind and solar. So if it's not sunny, it's usually windy here.
True.
Especially by the lakes. So,
okay.
And Detroit is downriver. Wyandotte has both solar and wind power, helping their energy, their local city energy facility. And that was even recommended when I asked for proposals 3 years ago here at just to power WHFR. Of course, the politics is the whole college wants to go to alternative energy, and we couldn't get ours done because it would look bad for every other department.
Right.
That they couldn't do it too. I'm hoping with the new science building here on campus, which is going to have its official dedication a week from today on the 19th, their green roof, as they call it, is going to be something that maybe we can do elsewhere on campus. But, those kinds of energy efficiencies, they pop up wherever it's appropriate. We could be totally powered by solar and wind, relatively small windmill, if you will, I'm going to call it that. In fact, we have one on campus. It's really cool. It's horizontal, and it's all vertical blades.
Yes.
So, and it just spins all the time. Boy, does that pick up on wind.
It
you
does.
Know. But a combination would give us power almost every day of the year here that we wouldn't have to use off the grid. It'd be free power, free, F-R-E-E. And so most homes or cities, okay, if they're maybe in Mount Pleasant, right in the middle of the state, they're going to have trouble with wind power.
Sure, sure.
But solar is getting better and better all the time.
Well, he didn't say it couldn't be done. He just said some states are in a much better position to do that. And yes. That's why when my question was, do you think 25 is doable? He said, absolutely. He said, but more than that might be a stretch, whereas California, Arizona, Texas is a real big one. We'll be able to exceed
California
that.
California has already voted in place.
That's right.
33%.
That's
one
right.
Third of the state power. By, I think, 2025.
Right.
Maybe they're better able to do it. Certainly they have a big coastline. They get a lot of wind power out of that. I even wonder if they don't get... Has anybody worked out that tidal power stuff? You know how the moon causes the water levels to raise and lower each month? That when that happens, I know everybody thinks, well, that's kind of slow, isn't it? Yes and no. There's actually ways to have like flotation devices that go up and down, and as they go up and down, they generate electricity.
Sure.
That apparently isn't cost effective yet, but there's a lot of ways to do it, and the only effective critique of that I've heard is that, well, what if a new idea? Now, we can't consider tidal power in Michigan.
No.
But if there's some new idea on how to do it, like harnessing the power of birds flapping their wings, or, you know, then we couldn't, that's fictitious, but, you know, we wouldn't be able to because it says right there we can't. Oh, come on. Nobody's going to sue us if we find other alternative ways, even if it's in the Constitution.
Right. They just have the five ways now. But, you know, and I even asked him, can we, maybe we can piggyback on the efforts of other states. He said, no, this proposal is very specific.
Oh, yeah. It's
only in
our
Michigan.
Government use.
Exactly.
It's not for individuals or corporations to do, but it's just the governmental operations.
Right.
And I think that's small enough, and it's doable. It has been done in other states,
sure.
And it's doable in this state. You just need the wherewithal by having the standard. That's all. Okay, I wanted to mention briefly, about 8 minutes to go in the hour, don't forget Highway 61 with Joanne Kay will be coming up at 2 o'clock or so and continue on to 6 o'clock this afternoon. The best in blues, especially local blues, Michigan blues, right here on WHFR.FM. And we're making waves. Oh, boy. Democrats eye three seats, also going back to Press and Guide from October 10th, and good for them. Big story here from Charles Crum from the Journal Register News Service. That's okay.
That's the parent company.
Okay.
The one that just went bankrupt.
Great story. Picking judges for Michigan Supreme Court is at the top of the nonpartisan section of November 6th election ballot. In an oddity of politics, judicial races are nonpartisan. In other states, there'll actually be Republican judges, Democratic judges. So if you did that straight party vote, you would include the judges.
Exactly.
Okay. And we all know, those of us who are semi-alive anyway, we know that the judges don't get elected. They can't raise enough money individually as nonpartisan. So they ally themselves and ask for, beg for support from either one political party or the other. But that means once they get elected, and of course they have to get reelected in the, you know, 4 years later, and it rotates, of course, among the judges. We don't reelect them all of them at the same time. But there's two asking for, it's an 8-year term. Two are up for new 8-year terms. Boy, that's a big deal. 8 years of getting these people on the bench, and then there is a partial term ending in January 1st. And so there's actually three candidates that are Republican nominated, and three candidates that are Democratic nominated. The Republicans are. I'll just do the last names. Markman, O'Brien, and Zahra. Z-A-H-R-A.
So this is for the circuit court?
No, this is the big-time Michigan Supreme Court.
Zahra, yeah.
Let's not worry about the circuit court and the district court. There's so many darn candidates, most of them are incumbents, so I wouldn't even worry about that. If you can sort them out, you're better than I am. I have a completely strange way to pick candidates for that. But I think it's better than, you know, ethnic affiliation. And I'll admit it. There's just so many. I have no time or ability to find out anything about any of them. And yet I read a couple hours a day and I, you know, try to keep up. I vote for the women. I'd rather have a woman judge. And I know, boys, that's sexist, huh?
A little bit.
Yeah, because there's a lot of good male judges. I saw a couple of them when I served on jury trials. And so I apologize to whoever those judges were. They were good, it seems.
We interviewed one on our show.
Yes, district court.
District, sure.
Right. But because I don't know. So whatever criteria you have, hopefully you can find out more than me. Maybe you know at least one judge personally, or you were in their court and you liked them, or you heard about them in the journal here. And so, sure, by all means, so whatever. But it's very, these are 8-year term, folks, okay, for the two, and just a partial term for a few months, for, well, till 2015.
Right.
It's not quite a partial. That's still, oh my gosh, yeah. That's 3 years almost. So 2 full years anyway. Republicans, I mentioned them once. They're Markman, O'Brien, and Zara. And the Democrats are, who are basically not there now because the Republicans got all their people in last time around. We're talking about Kelly, McCormick, and Johnson. And by the way, fits my criteria. They're all women.
Really?
All the Democrats are all women.
Okay.
So, but the Republicans have one woman in there too, Colleen O'Brien. But this is very important. This 8 years, folks, of basically judges who have, they are, let's use the word beholden. That's an old-time Western word. They thank and always think about their support from either the Democrats or Republicans, which means they are, yes, able to be somewhat influenced on certain votes by the Democrat and Republican parties.
Of course they feel a little bit of an obligation.
Now, that, I wish there was none of that. I wish it was could be just good legal opinions without feeling beholden, the old-time term, to anybody, rich, poor, Democrats, Republicans. But right now, we have a massive Republican-supported candidate domination in the Michigan Supreme Court. So my grandparents would definitely say,
vote
for the Democrats.
Sure, mix it up.
Yeah, mix it up some. We need a balance there. And for those of you that love balance, I don't like falling down, so I love balance. Anyway, the Democrats, again, since I mentioned Republicans one more time, I'll mention the Democrats one more time for fairness. It is Connie Marie Kelly, Bridget Mary McCormick, and Sheila Johnson, who maybe doesn't have a middle name. I don't know. But very important. It won't be on the ballot that they're Republican or Democrat. So if you don't know about it in advance, I'm sorry. But this article clearly says the choices before voters are anything but nonpartisan.
Okay.
So it is very partisan. If you love the Republicans and are going to vote straight Republican, you better vote for, I hate to mention it, but I will again, Markham, O'Brien, and Zara. But if you're Democrats or you want balance, you better vote for, I mean, it's 8 years or 2 years for the partial one, Connie Marie Kelly, Bridget Mary McCormick, and Sheila Johnson. Okay? It's quite clear that there's something going on there. Now, amazingly, the Libertarian Party has got two names for Supreme Court judge. Well, as long as the other parties are kicking some candidates in, you could have a couple Libertarians on there, a Bob Rodas or a Kerry Morgan. They would be beholden to the Libertarian Party. And even the Natural Law Party, Doug Dern, he's their candidate for Supreme Court.
What's his name?
Doug Dern,
go,
D-E-R-N.
Go Doug.
Well,
give him credit. Right?
3 minutes left. I have to mention, you know, just, yes, I discovered when I put my ballot in, amazingly, for president, there they are again, the Natural Law Party.
Constitution.
And the Constitution Party.
Yeah.
And their candidates are there. And what about them? I think 4 years ago, we actually had the presidential candidate for the Constitution, or the Taxpayers.
Yes.
Party. It is the Constitutional Law Party everywhere, but in Michigan, and I think in Michigan it's called the Taxpayers.
I think you're right.
It's the same party.
Yeah.
But for some reason in Michigan, they don't use that name, but it's the same party, same candidate.
Same philosophy, policies, everything.
Right.
Sure.
The trouble is, they're not on enough ballots nationwide to actually ever be elected president.
Right, okay? Now.
Even if everyone voted for them and they won every state they're on the ballot for, they can't be in the Electoral College president. They just would never get it. They would never get there. That is just the practicality of it. Whereas if enough people vote for them, either the Green Party candidate, Jill Stein, or the Libertarian Party candidate, Gary Johnson, who's not on the Michigan ballot thanks to Republican lawsuits against him, which I think were unfair. But Stein or Johnson could be president of the U.S. if enough people vote for him.
Don't you think a Libertarian Party's been around since 80, so what's that, 32 years? They have come a long way in a short period. Well, the Green Party, they've only been around since what? Like, I want to say 92? as an official party?
There was a little bit of a of a conflict. There was actually two Green parties for a while, and so they actually go back further than that.
Okay.
But the Green Party that's on all these ballots is the Green Party of the United States.
Okay.
There is still the other organization called the Green Party, but they're not the Green Party of the U.S. They have no candidates. They're on no ballots, but they still exist. There's a big battle. There was even a court challenge of who is the real Green Party.
Right.
And finally, it was the Green Party of the U.S. that won the court battle. So that's the one that is on all the ballots. I hate to admit this, but this is showing how stupid smart people can be sometimes. I even sent a donation to the wrong Green Party last year.
Right.
A little one,
she
thank
a nice
God.
Little...
But it was the wrong Green Party. They still exist. They have a website. But it's not them, folks. So actually, to answer your question, Green Party of one sort or the other has been around in the U.S. longer than what you said. I don't know exactly when the first one started, but okay. Then they had this infighting and differences. And the Green Party today that's on all the ballots, that has all the platform that's been talked about, is in fact the Green Party of the United States. So it's GPUS.org.
.org.
If you wanted more information.
And that's Jill Stein represents
that. Jill Stein is their political candidate. We are trying to get an interview with any big-time candidate from the Green Party.
Yes.
We have we had a good response from the Green Party for Cheryl Hancala, who is their vice presidential candidate, mm-hmm. that maybe we can work that out at least. And the Libertarian Party has been somewhat silent, probably because they lost Gary Johnson as their standard bearer in Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Even though he's the candidate elsewhere, we hope to get maybe one of their other high-ranking candidates for office on this show before November 6th.
All the phone calls and emails are out. We're just kind of we're waiting right
now. Well, that's the time we have. Probably our podcast is already cut off, or it will shortly. It usually goes till 2 minutes after. But we have another couple minutes before Joanne arrives, so we're going to keep talking to the live audience here.
All right.
Just a rundown of – so definitely grab the Dearborn Press and Guide from last Wednesday, October 10th, or go online to their website, pressandguide.com, for information about Proposal 1, 2, and 3. And also candidates for Michigan Supreme Court. Very important reference to have. Your mailbox is going to be flooded with stuff on other proposals, and it's